as you just pointed out, there's a lot of kind of geometry, mathematics, science, astrology that goes into it that's kind of been proven.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, again, mainstream academia will have you believe that the tombs, when there's zero evidence of that, there's never been any bodies.
None.
And again, it kind of, well, we're saying it's this, this, and this, and we've got logical breakdowns, you know, maths, mm-hmm. geometry, astrology, that proves that these are in line with what we're saying. Where's the bodies? How are you able to maintain this narrative?
It's infuriating. When you actually start to dig in, you realize just how infantile the explanations given for why they attribute it to XYZ truly are. Because, again, you just have this incredible vast array of scientific, mathematic, astronomical knowledge that's encoded into these, plus the precision, again, of the site, true north, all of these different precise alignments, Orion star belt. And their evidence for example, the Pyramid of Khufu is that there was one scribbly little insignia on one brick that Zahi Hawass found and was like, oh, there we go, it's Khufu's pyramid then. It's like, that's it. That's all you've got. You've got no body. You've got no mummy. You've got no similarities to the Valley of the Kings and the Valley of the Queens, where you've just got gold and calligraphy and hieroglyphics and motifs all lining every square inch of that space where these sacred burial chambers were for the kings and the queens and like the, you know, holy priests. And then you go into the pyramids, all of them, and they're just bare, completely bare, not a single hieroglyph. And so, you know, it runs in complete contradiction to the typical hallmarks of that culture, of that civilization, that they covered everything in hieroglyphs, which is just objectively true, because if you go to Egypt, you'll just see it on every single temple. but not on the pyramids, also not on, around the Sphinx temple, which some people believe is far older, potentially around the same age as the Sphinx, if the water erosion turns out to be true, taking about, you know, 10,000 BC or plus. There's no hieroglyphs on those either. And they use a stone building technique that you then see echoed in Peru and other areas in Greece. And so, like, you know, that kind of signifies some form of a global pattern that, you know, this is far older and indicative of a global civilization. The lack of hieroglyphs, the lack of any mummies being recovered ever from the pyramids on the Giza Plateau. What is their argument? It's again, once you start understanding just how much advanced science is present and architecture is present in the pyramids, there is far more evidence for the alternative theories of this being advanced, you know, energetic capacitor of some form. As contradictory and as strange as that sounds, you know, when you really get the fact that, for example, the core of the pyramid is made of rose quartz granite, which is a piezoelectric material, meaning it can produce electricity naturally under stress. And one of the forms of stress where it produces electricity is vibrational stress or acoustical stress. And then you have the entire pyramid made out of limestone, which is a natural acoustic amplifier, so good that the Greeks used it to build their amphitheaters because you could hear from the back. You know, if the stone seats were made of limestone, the voice would carry all the way to the back. So you've got this literal geo-energetic coupling between the stones. The limestone produces amplified acoustics, the rose quartz granite becomes electrical under acoustic pressure, and then we also find out that the King's Chamber, which is made of rose quartz granite, is specifically acoustically tuned. So why would they need to employ essentially high-level archaeoacoustics into their design for a tomb? It makes no sense. So there's so many, like there's actually so many that it's hard to list them all. Reasons to argue against the tomb model, but that's what we teach our children, and that's what's in the books. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I went in my real job. I went with a few clients to a natural history museum, ancient history museum, and it was so frustrating because when we're going down the ancient Egypt sort of,
I couldn't do it. Yeah, it triggers
me. This is not accurate, and you feel like saying to me, "I'm just like, no, just."
Yeah.
You know, I'm not benefiting anything by saying this, but yeah,
actually, I think it's this. Like, yeah, okay, shut up, dude. But like, it's true.
Yeah, you know? It is frustrating. Okay, so obviously, like you said, there's loads of anomalies, and this would be like a 20-hour podcast. But the one that always fascinates me, and I kind of want to, while I've got you, ask, you've referenced a few times the Sphinx.
Mm.
So Graham Hancock's in the belief, and I'd say I'm in that camp, obviously biased towards Graham, I know, but the notion that the Sphinx is, you know, 12,000 years, and it was originally a lion's head, and it was because of the
Age
of Leo. And then obviously, when you look at the current head of the pharaoh with its headdress on, it's not in proportion with the body, but the Egyptians were very much big on proportion sizes.
Exactly.
Where's your stance on the Sphinx?
I mean, pretty much with Graham Hancock on that. I mean, you know, I'm not you know, versed in terms of astronomy and astrology, and but the Egyptians, objectively, at least from the cultures that we know, like the Pharaonic phases and eras, they're obsessed with astrology and astronomy. Like, they understood the stars and they, you know, intuited symbol from the stars, and it was incredibly important to them. So the idea that they would put something there that isn't representative of the constellation that was currently in phase during that time makes no sense. I think that's Graham's argument for the idea that it was much more sensible that this would be aligned to Leo and the lion head. And so, yeah, I agree. I mean, again, for me, regardless of orientation, which is an interesting element to it, for me, the water erosion is just such a strong signature. It's such a very important one, and especially because they made active attempts to literally destroy evidence. I mean, covering up fissure lines is destroying evidence, right? So, like, that's what they were doing. So, yeah, like, I think it's far, far older, far older. And there's been restoration. Like, you know, if you look at some of the original photos in black and white when it's still basically just sticking out of the sand, like, they've done a significant amount of restoration to reduce the weathering patterns as well, because those original photos, it looks old, like way older than it does now.
You've been to Egypt.
I've been to Egypt.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm going this year.
Nice.
I've had to go.
Are you doing, what kind of plan? Are you doing, like, a tour group?
Yeah, or, yeah, so Cairo for a couple of days.
Great.
And then Luxor. And then a couple of days chilling out in Sharm el-Sheikh.
Fantastic.
As well. Just for the,
You'll love it, dude. You'll love it.
I can't wait. It's been on my bucket list for years, and I feel, especially having met Graham and, you know, earlier on this year, you kind of feel obliged to go now.
You do.
And obviously meeting people like yourself, it's, yeah.
Yeah, I've been getting the itch to go back at least to the Giza Plateau for a few days just to have another walk around. Because, like, I feel like when I went, I mean, I was already researching things, but I don't really feel like I had the consciousness that I have now, like the research that I have now to really look with an eagle eye and find the little machining marks on rocks. Because so much on the Giza Plateau, like, you know, when you go, it's cheap to get on the plateau and you can just spend the whole day there walking around, looking at little, you know, tunnel ways going underground. And obviously you've got the pyramids and the Sphinx, but if you just look at the other temples and the other rocks, and you see evidence everywhere for high-grade machining tool marks and, like, you know, just cut direct lines through the rock. And one of the places in the, I think it was Cairo Museum, there's, like, a massive block of granite, like this, I mean, literally about the size of this table going all the way down, solid block. And it's kind of pushed into the corner of the museum room. So it's, like, basically in that corner, and it just looks like a big granite block. But if you squeeze yourself, and you literally have to squeeze yourself round against the wall to look on this side, and when you look on this side, there is a butter knife line just going directly through this piece of granite. Like, it literally just looks like someone took a laser and went zhoop. It's like, how do you explain that? And it's tucked into that corner. There are so many anomalies in Egypt, man. Like, literally, you could spend 3-4 hours just listing all the different artifacts, like the jugs and all these weird things that pop up that just completely contradict how advanced they were. Yeah. It's amazing.
I'm kind of glad, because I think if I'd have gone a few years back, it'd have been just to, tick that box, I've seen the pyramids.
Yeah, exactly.
But now,
you'll be looking.
Yeah,
you're
going to be observing. Definitely be looking out for that granite block.
Oh my God, yeah. My question is, why do things keep getting more advanced the further we go back into time? That's contradictory, right? It shouldn't get more advanced stonework, more advanced technology, and yet that's what we see.
An incredible thing to claim has caused a massive response from both the alternative research community and the mainstream sectors.
I would love this kind of stuff to be true, but it is total bullshit. They're using a method that has never been presented before in depth. It's never been tested. It follows all the rules of pseudoscience.
When they've tested it on the Gran Sasso laboratory in Italy, and they tested this technology on the Mosul Dam in Iraq, and Filippo Biondi, the guy that actually proposed this whole Doppler synthetic aperture radar fusion, has done it on structural integrity for bridges, findings like this from the Giza Plateau. Maybe 10, 20 years ago, they wouldn't be able to do as much, but now we're in a different space. They can't shut down the conversation as easily. Podcasts are able to completely overtake the mainstream narrative control of the modern world. Göbekli Tepe in Turkey and so many other incredible megalithic sites around the world that just defy explanation of the current model. It was so shocking when Ancient Apocalypse came out on Netflix, and you just saw, like, Rolling Stones, New York Times, The Guardian, this is such a dangerous conspiracy theory adult documentary. It's far right. The water erosion is just such a strong signature. It's such a very important one, and especially because they made active attempts to literally destroy evidence. I mean, covering up fissure lines is destroying evidence, right? So, like, that's what they were doing. Incredibly sophisticated architecture that mimics, whether that mimics this or this mimics that, can't tell which one came first. But when I went to Malta, so many of the stone building projects there just look like Newgrange in Ireland. It's just like, huh. So why are there these global similarities and this pattern? Christopher Dunn, who's an engineer who went out to Egypt, very famous for going out and finding so many of these machining tool marks that are just clearly evidence of something more advanced than copper tools and copper drills and sand abrasive, which is what they tend to say is used for these drilling holes. And they're just so clear and obvious. Like I said, there is a global pattern of shared archaeology, shared advancement in stone building from what are primarily, when you speak to the indigenous cultures, lost civilizations. They're not attributed to that civilization. We do it. We attribute to the Incas or the ancient Greece or Rome with the, you know, Temple of Jupiter. But the indigenous stories almost always will talk about lost civilizations. And a lot of the times they reference giants, man. Like, I don't know what to think about that.